Welcome to Cashflow Positive. I'm your host, Kenny Bedwell, founder of SCR Insights, one of the leading data platforms in the industry. Through using data and analytics, I've been able to replace my W-2 with cash flow from my successful short-term rentals. And my goal is to help you achieve the same freedom and success. Whether you're a seasoned investor or just a novice looking to make your mark, Cashflow Positive is your go-to resource for unlocking the full potential of your property portfolio. Welcome, everybody, back to another episode of Cashflow Positive. I am your host, Kenny Bedwell, and today we have a special guest with us, Natalie Palmer. Now, Natalie has been hosting for over 7 years in the SCR industry. She owns some condos. She co-hosts. There's about 10 in her portfolio. But more importantly, she is a voice and an expert in our industry. She has the No Vacancy podcast. And one of my favorite events that's not for me, but more so for women, it's called Level Up Your Listing. And it is once a year. I think they're going to do it again next year in Scottsdale. And but Natalie, and why I brought her on to talk about the future trends of the SCR industry is because she has a ton of experience coaching and working with students all across the country. And she's also very passionate about teaching women how to invest in real estate. And so I brought her on here to share her insights. So without further ado, Natalie, take it away. Tell us more about yourself.
Of course. And thank you so much, Kenny, for having me. So my name is Natalie Palmer, and I do a lot in the industry. From just an operations and hosting perspective, I've been a host for almost 7 years now. And the kind of niche I've carved out for myself is I co-host and own 10 condos, all in the same condo complex in Big Bear, California. So really operating them kind of like a boutique motel, just from my systems and the economies of scale, doing laundry all in one place and restocking, having one cleaning team. So that's kind of been my approach to hosting. And after that took off, I've pivoted and I do so many other things now. I'm the host of No Vacancy, the podcast. I am the co-founder of Level Up Your Listing Summit, which is an annual women's short-term rental summit every March in Phoenix. So that's a bit about me. And I'm also an Airbnb ambassador. I'm really passionate about coaching new hosts and experienced hosts how to scale up and just get their operations under them so that this isn't consuming their lives.
Yeah, that's a lot of stuff going on. And you're a mother of two or three?
Three now, yeah. That's the most important. I'm also a wife and a mother of three, a three-year-old, two-and-a-half-year-old, and a five-month-old. So a lot is happening.
Yes. And for those of you out there, I guess the ladies out there who've not gone to their conference, you guys are doing it again next year, right? Yep. I don't know the dates. I saw the emails. I apologize.
Maybe no, you haven't missed anything. So we did launch pre-sale already. Pre-sale is only to people who have attended the summit before. So it's kind of our little insider group.
That's why. Okay.
Yes. But we are launching public sale maybe by the time you're hearing this, because officially doors open and tickets launch October 8th. By the time you're listening, that may have already happened, but we're doing it again in March. New venue this time, but still the Phoenix, Scottsdale-ish area.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, and the reason I'm even bringing this up, this is for the women listeners out there. Their conference is specifically, I'm just saying it, this is from my perspective, so if that's okay, Natalie.
Yeah.
It's for you. It's for the women out there. There's a lot of, every single woman I've talked to who's gone to this event, they absolutely love it, and it builds like a community, and they're just raving about it. You know, I feel like there's a lot of events out there and they're kind of for everyone. And this one's very specific for short-term rental hosts who are in co-hosts and property managers, realtors, all that good stuff, who are women, and brings them together. And it's just been really positive. So definitely check it out. But let's jump into the topic. I don't want to talk about your event too much and scare people away, but, anyway, but it's an awesome event though. I can't.
Thank you. Thank you for saying that.
So we're talking about the future trends of the SCR industry. Okay. Obviously, you know, I've got data and, but we had it before we hit the record button on this episode. We were kind of talking about that gut feeling that you have and what you see. So tell us, what are you seeing with your students? Because you do some coaching, right?
Yeah.
So you do some coaching and you help students. So what are your students seeing? What are you experiencing? Tell us what's going on.
Yeah, I'm really excited to talk to you about this. Like I said, this is my approach when I think of trends and forecasting, future casting the industry, it's a gut feeling, it's intuition, it's what I'm hearing anecdotally. And then when I talk to Kenny, he backs it up with the numbers that I'm like, okay, I am onto something here. So I'm really excited to have this chat with you. But I think right out of the gate, what I'm seeing is a lot of hosts are realizing that this wasn't the passive income that they thought it was going to be, that it's a lot more work than they anticipated. I think even though it's tricky because a lot of people got really good interest rates, so there's not necessarily a lot of supply coming on the market, but a lot of people are pivoting, maybe switching short-term rentals to mid-term rentals or long-term rentals or trying to find property managers right now. So that's kind of what I'm seeing is people are realizing they're in over their head from an operations perspective. So I do think that this is the time if you want to be a property manager or a co-host, like go, like run with it because there are a lot of hosts who are in over their head. So that's right out of the gate what I'm seeing just from that perspective.
Sorry, let me hop in here. I think you said something really, really, really important there. So you're saying there's a lot of hosts in over their head. Mm-hmm. What the heck that mean? Why are they in over their head? Is it financially? What? Like what? Yeah. Tell me more about that. Let's dive into that.
Well, financially is definitely one. A lot of the hosts I talk to are seeing a decrease year over year in profit in gross revenue this year compared to last year. Is that recession, inflation, or is this kind of a return to normalcy from like the post-COVID boom? Is it all of the above? I'm not quite sure. Is it that there's more competition? On that note, I will say, I think a lot of people are like, oh, it's too saturated now. But I am still seeing in certain markets, I don't think it's even an oversaturation issue because it looks like demand is just down. And you're the guy with the numbers. So you tell me, but I've seen a lot of people say, oh, when I started this, there was 500 listings in my market. Now there's 2,500. I can't compete. But I'm seeing like demand is just down. Like people just aren't traveling in certain markets as much anymore. So that's what makes me think it's more of the economy. I'm not really sure.
Are you, so, and for everybody listening, I think this is really, and this is one of the reasons why I wanted to bring Natalie on here is because you're on the West Coast.
Yeah.
You know, and that market is different. I think a lot of people listening I know of are have properties at least in the Southeast, or obviously I'm up Northeast, so I naturally get in a lot of pull from there too. But, you know, so the West Coast, a lot of people think it's different, you know, than some of these other areas. And the reality is maybe some markets, but it's relatively the same trends we're seeing. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not that crazy. And so the things you're seeing are going on in these other big, big, big popular markets in the Southeast and the Northeast, Midwest even.
Yeah, definitely. And I will say, I don't want to paint like a super pessimistic picture. I actually just had a bookkeeper on my podcast and I really talked to her about like what she's seeing in the books for people she's managing. Cause I'm like, you know, numbers don't lie. Like our host's still profiting. And she said, without a doubt, she is still seeing tons of profitable hosts. She mentioned several of them have 50% year over year increases this year. And the common thread she said is it's people who are reinvesting in the property, not the ones who are like, oh, great, I'll take the money and pay myself out. Sure, you need to support your time and pay out a little bit to like cover the bills and whatnot. But she said the ones that are reinvesting and adding more amenities, keeping up with design trends, those are the ones that are still profiting. So it's still possible out there. I don't want to paint a totally negative picture, but it's obviously more competitive than ever.
And I think that's the key to people need to understand is that, you know, it's not, you said it at the beginning, you nailed it. It's not a passive business. It's not a set it and forget it. You have to reinvest. The average hotel, they actually do a soft update once every 5 years, like the big, like the, yep. And then they do like some sort of like renovation. I think once every, like the average is like 13 years where they like renovate everything. And so, are we, when we got into this game, are we expecting to do some of those things? You know what I mean? Like, I don't think people were. I personally wasn't. I was like, okay, like I can get, what can I get away with to maximize my returns? But in fact, that's actually short-sighted when we're trying to treat this like as a business, a true hospitality business and not just a real estate investment.
I didn't know those numbers on the hotels. And that's interesting. I even think about like Starbucks's. I feel like every 5 years, like the Starbucks's around me have a remodel. So maybe there's something to that number. Yeah. Like, you know, always if you get the stained towels and stained sheets, like, of course, replace that. But maybe that's like a good rule of thumb. Every 5 years, like plan some sort of a design refresh or something. Paint over the mural that's now outdated and like replace it with the new trend. I like that.
So here's my approach to it. And I would encourage people. So it's a business, right? Business first. You know, you have to reinvest into the property, but there's diminishing returns for every dollar you put in. And if you're just going about this going like every year or every 3 years or every 5 years, I'm going to have to dump in, you know, $100,000 or whatever that is your, does your cash flow justify that? Like, so if you only made $20,000 a year and you knew every 5 years, you're going to have to do some sort of update and it was going to cost you $100,000. You just canceled that out,
right?
Your investment out for your cash flow. So there needs to be like a purpose, not only just from the cash flow perspective of trying to get your cash flow and stay competitive, but also the appreciation side. When you do these updates, does that help force appreciation into the property? Does that help give you more equity so that you can exit?
Mm.
You know, I think a lot of people too need to look at what their properties are currently doing and the equity, the return on equity of their properties, and decide whether or not they should, you know, sell it and take that equity and put it into something else bigger and badder, you know, or better, and grow, rather than just like trying to keep dumping more money into a property that's just going to do like the same every single year. You know what I mean?
That is actually, I've never thought about that, but that is so interesting, Kenny, because you're right. Like, I think a lot of the improvements that people make are new throw pillows, new neon sign, whatever. None of that is going to like tap into the future appreciation or like put equity into the property. That comes with you when you sell. That's not an exit strategy, but you're right. If you're remodeling, if the improvements you're making every few years are, I don't know, if you've got like a regular pool now, maybe in 5 years you put in like a swim up bar or like a Baja bench or whatever, like that is actually an improvement to the property. You put in like the mini golf course. I've never thought about it that way. It's always kind of like the soft refresh, you know, with just like new bedding, new pillows. But that's a really good point. Like if we're thinking long term here, so many of us get into this, not just for cash flow, but the long term equity play. So maybe those 5 year remodels we're talking about should really be things that are going to improve the equity in the home. That's a great point. I have not thought about it like that.
Yeah, sure. I don't want to take this over or anything. So I want to flip it back to you. So with your co-hosts and your clients and everything, what are they telling? Because you co-host as well. So what are you telling your owners, or you're helping your students tell their owners that they're working with these properties they need to do to get ahead?
Yeah, this is a big one. I feel like I'm running into a wall a lot. Sometimes it's very much the chicken and the egg situation. Like some owners, I'm like, hey, let's put in a hot tub. Like, let's do this. And it's like, well, I need to make some money first. And I'm like, well, you need to put this in to see that money come in. It's hard. It's a hard conversation to have. Anybody listening to this is obviously in it and they get it. And they're like, yeah, why would you put in these amenities? But the people that we're co-hosting for often that bought this as an investment or inherited a second home, and they don't know, they don't see the numbers. So I think that's where it is really important to go into, as a co-host, you only make money when the host does, when the owner does. So you have to kind of go in and show them like, this is going to be the return on investment. Learn how to underwrite a property, learn how to analyze a market, learn what the top 1%, top 5%, top 10% of properties are doing, and really show your client why they're bringing in those numbers and how they're not just sinking another, you know, 10 to 15,000 in, but it is going to pay off.
We're looking at it. We've got a big project. It's a $1 million property. And, you know, we knew like going in, I was like, look, this is going to cost us. We're partners and he's the money side. I'm like, look, this is going to cost us, you know, $250,000 to $300,000, you know, like I wouldn't even put it under contract unless you're comfortable with that, you know, like dumping in that. And he's like, you know, yeah, let's like see and like get all the numbers and stuff. And then as we're going through, he's like, well, I kind of rather like get it like maybe 90% or 75% of the way there and then try to go and find something else. And I'm like, I understand that. But if you take that money, the return on that money is actually better than trying to go and dump it, find another deal first off and dump it into that other property in hopes that that one's also going to cash flow the same amount. Like, it's just like this, like, don't be afraid to invest into the property. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And that's a good point too. Like the second you get the second property, you know, we all talk about like, oh, I want to scale up. I want to scale up. And people think that that means more properties. What if it did just mean improving what you already have and scaling up the numbers on that one listing? Because now you've got a second insurance policy, double the property taxes, double the utilities, double the travel there, double the time finding the market. Yeah, I think if you can take, you know, if you've got an extra 20 grand lying around and it's like, okay, is this the down payment for the next thing or do I improve this one? And you did mention there's a diminishing return at a certain point. So you obviously want to research this. Don't sink another 20K into something where the market doesn't justify those returns. But I do think that that's something a lot of hosts are overlooking. It's like, oh, you know, we're stretched thin on this one. Like, let's go up to the next one. Like, then we can just, if we're only profiting, whatever, X amount, let's just throw out numbers, 3 grand a month, and we want to be making 6 grand a month. We just need to find another property doing the same. What if you can improve this one already? I think that that's always the first thing that you should be looking at.
With your properties, you're owning or co-hosting, what are you doing maybe differently this year than you were doing years before?
So this is one that I don't think gets talked about enough, but I have spent, so let me preface this. My properties are in condos. There is really, being totally honest, not much I can do in terms of adding amenities. I don't have a yard. My HOA is not going to let me add the giant chessboard or the mini golf course. We have a community pool and a community jacuzzi. I can't do the private hot tub. Like I have a small deck that just literally I can't fit a private hot tub there. My HOA wouldn't even approve it. So the changes
you can add it like a zip line off the balcony.
Yes, you'd have to. Yeah, totally. maybe HOA will go for that. So I'm in a unique position where I hear about all this stuff and like I believe in it. I vouch for it and I see the changes it's making. I don't have the luxury to like add these amenities. So for me, how I can be competitive, I've really taken this time to go totally back to basics. And it's like, gosh, if you just read reviews, like the properties that are suffering right now, it's all management wasn't responsive. The place wasn't clean. It looked worn down. There's so much in just that alone that I think you can do. It does get overlooked. It's always like, we need another neon sign. We need another mural. Fun stuff. I'm not saying don't do it, but like, please like go back to basics because this is what I'm doing. This is really the only area I have in my properties to make enhancements. Obviously the design refresh, even that I'd have to get HOA approval if I wanted to like start tearing down walls and all sorts of things. I'm very limited. And so for me, it's been going back to basics and just is my response rate as high as it can be? Like how good is my communication? My cleaning protocols have totally, you know, doubled down on those and just making sure nothing is falling through the cracks. I think that that's really getting overlooked, but there's so much you can do just in basics of hospitality.
I don't know if you're comfortable with it, but like sharing, but like year over year and, you know, going back to the basics and stuff, what you just said, like, how is that? Like, what are you seeing like number wise? Is that having an impact on your numbers? Positive, negative? Like, yeah.
I would say our numbers are staying consistent year over year, which for me is a win because my market is a lot of people in Big Bear. If you pull it up in whatever, you know, data software you're using, Big Bear is down. So for me, it's a win to just be continually breaking even. Yeah. Even just things like we're improving the brands of the complimentary coffee we provide and stuff. Like there is still so much you can do just in these like basic things of hospitality. I will say I do have a few owners I co-host for who don't want to pay more for cleaning and don't want the better cleaning protocols in place and don't see the benefit of splurging on luxury brands, don't want to replace stained linens or worn sheets as often, and you notice it. I will say this is really interesting too. Of the 10 properties I manage, like I said, they're all in the exact same condo complex. So location is the same. They all have the exact same layout. They all have the same management, me. They all have the same cleaner. Like all those things being equal, I have the property that I own compared to some of the ones I co-host is making more than double. So it's very like it's a really good case study that I have of what is making that difference. And I can tell you it's all down to the interior, how it's designed, the staying on top of the refreshes, keeping things looking nice and crisp for everyone. And I think the brands that we're using. So higher quality coffee that's on display, higher quality shampoo and conditioner, small things. I mean, it comes down to probably we're spending maybe $5,000 more over the year, and it's making more than double what my lowest performing property is.
Oh, wow. Wow. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. Awesome. And also they need to get on it.
Yeah. I know. This is what I mentioned earlier. Like, this is the one thing I do love co-hosting, and there's a lot of opportunity. I kind of kick this conversation off with that. A lot of people don't want to be managing anymore. But I always say with co-hosting, it is actually more difficult to work with the owners than with the guests. Everyone who gets into Airbnb thinks that guests are going to drive them crazy. It's the owners. So having these conversations and like really trying to educate the client, it's hard with some people.
Do you have any techniques or recommendations for people of how they can like help educate?
Yeah. And most of my owners are receptive. There's a couple that are just like, no, we need to see more money before we're willing to reinvest. And like I said, that's kind of that chicken and the egg situation. Like, there's some people you're just not going to get through, unfortunately. But for the most part, I've seen the biggest success. And it is easier for me because I have this perfect case study of like everything's in the same location, and I can show you what the bottom two to three properties are doing and what my top two to three are doing. And for the ones that are in the middle, it's like, it doesn't take that much to get you here. You know, another $5,000 can really unlock an extra 20 to 30K. So those ones, it's easy. It's an easy sell. And I have a lot of owners that are very cooperative. And I guess you just, I don't know, at a certain point, you have to decide what business you want to run. Is it still worth it for you to manage those ones that just aren't going to get on board? Maybe you want to cut the cord and spend your time finding higher quality clientele that gets the vision. That's a decision I think every co-host has to make for themselves. I keep them because it's just so streamlined to manage everything in the same complex. But I think if I was maybe more spread or had a different co-hosting model, there's a few owners I would have dropped by now. I'll say that.
Yeah, I've gone through that. When I first got started, I did some co-hosting and I had an owner and I was like, hey, look, this isn't working.
We're not a good fit.
Anything. I'm like, I can't do that. I just felt like embarrassed. Guests constantly having issues. He wasn't willing to, you know, get better linens, do better stuff. And I'm like, I'm feeling bad and I'm buying stuff for the property because I'm like, dude, like we can't be having people and like have these issues, you know?
Totally.
Anyway, I feel like a lot of people I talk to, new people, they're immediately asking me, well, I heard that, you know, the industry's down, you know, or I heard Airbnb's dying. Like what, you know, and you're like getting over some of the myths, like busting the myths out the gate. And so I'm assuming that there's probably less and less people getting in. But what are you seeing from your side?
Yeah, this is a good question. So I can definitely say like our summit, you know, we've maintained the same amount of people each year that are attending, but the demographic has shifted. Year one, it was a lot more beginners that were just trying to explore them, you know, if this is something they wanted to do. And by year two, we had, I think, 90% of our attendees already had at least one short-term rental. So it seems like it's more the people, the numbers stay the same, but that pie chart kind of shifted to like, it's now a majority of people who are already doing this and they just want to hone in and improve.
Do you think that is a reflection of maybe the industry is maturing a little more?
I think so. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think so. This is what I'll say too. I'm really encouraged by the boutique operator. That I think is kind of my favorite host right now. You know, the hobby host, quote unquote, that has a second home somewhere and they're just kind of hoping that they can cover the mortgage on it and have it booked when they're not there. It's hard to be competitive with that at this point. Like you don't have enough systems, you're not going to see, you don't know the right pricing strategies. You're not in it to have that be an extremely top performing property. On the flip side, it's really hard now to stay on top of those properties. For me, the sweet spot and where I see the most success is like the, let's say the 8 to 25 properties. I think that those are the hosts who have enough professionalism and yeah, that I guess when you say like, is the industry maturing? That's it to me. It's those people who maybe started as a hobby, realize that they're good and have a knack for it. They've now grown to 8 to 25 properties about. And that's those are the hosts I want to reach and work with. That's kind of who I think we're starting to cater our summit more so to and my coaching, because those are the ones that like they want to invest in the tools to do it as well as possible, but still keep that boutique experience.
I love that. Yeah, I definitely think there's like this transition and more people are getting on board with the idea of like, it's not about the number of doors you have, it's about the quality of doors.
Yes. Yes.
And I think I gave this example on another episode, but you'll get to hear it for the first time. I was talking to this guy, I was at an event and this guy came up to me and he's like, hey, how many properties do you have? And that I own. And I was like, oh, I have like six that I'm like, he said manage, not own. And I was like, it's kind of a weird question. I bet this guy's like a rental arbitrage dude or something. I was like, so I've got six. And he's like, oh, cool. And I was like, well, what about you? And he's like, oh, I've got 100. And I was like, do you own or you? And he's like, oh, no, I do like rental arbitrage. And I'm like, okay, cool. Like, I'm not really like a big arbitrage person, but I respect it. And I'm like, okay, cool. And then he's like, yeah, I'm like cash flowing $500 per door per month. And I'm like, okay, so you're doing about 50K a month. And I'm like, sweet. So with my five doors last month, I hate calling them doors because it's not what they are, right?
I know.
Properties because they're legit properties.
Every time you say it, it's like my eye twitches.
Yeah, I know, right? I was like, I cash flowed 25K. So I literally like a tenth of what you did or the number of properties you did to like half, right? So I'm like, got all these other things going on in my life. Mm-hmm. This is a full-time job. He's got to hire employees and teams.
Yeah.
I'm like, you're probably not even making that much money. The end of the day, but you've got this like numbers thing in your head,
yeah,
in terms of how many doors and units, but that's not the industry we're in.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
that's not it.
The more you can, yeah, like get down into the quality and improve that, I think the more you cash flow. What are your thoughts on that?
Totally. No, and this goes hand in hand with what we were just saying, right? If you've got the extra 20 to 30K laying around, like, is that a down payment for something else? Or should you just reinvest and improve the quality of what you already have? And if the numbers pan out for that, that to me would always be the move. I agree with that. And as the industry is going to get more competitive, that really is the way to stand out. What's the point of 100 doors making marginal returns? You have one situation where a guest complains and you have to refund one reservation that month, that's your entire $500 a month profit that you were counting on. It's gone. Versus having some room to play with and like give that great experience. And right now during hurricane season, it's fires in my area. Like, yeah, we're running a business, but I also want to be the host that can afford to maybe cancel some reservations or move some dates around. This is what separates us from hotels also. Like a hotel has 100 doors and this is the more hands-on experience that you can give. I think if we don't want to keep being lumped in with hotels and we want STRs to be a standalone product that can like stand on its own two feet and it's not like, oh, should I book a hotel or a vacation rental? If we really want this to be its own thing, the boutique operator is where it's at.
Yeah, I like that a lot. I think that a lot of people, there's still a mindset of like, I can get in with, you know, however much, like, I'm just going to pick a random amount just to make it like, I get a lot of people coming and are like, hey, I've got 100K. My budget is up to like $900,000. You know, where are the good deals at? And I'm like, first off, there's five things going every STR investor: down payment, closing costs, renovations, updates, design and decor, and furnishings. So if you're doing a 10% down loan and you do 900,000, so that's 90K. Maybe you cover your closing costs, but that property better be ready to go. And I personally have never seen one that's 100% ready to go out the gate. That's going to make sense for the returns that they're expecting.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, you better dial that back. You know, you're talking like a $400,000 to $500,000 property just so you have enough, because you got to add things to that property to make it better.
On this note too, I talked to so many people who, when I asked them, like, what's your budget for a property? They're like, oh, we're looking for, like, you know, something 400 to 500,000. And as soon as you're like, where did you get that number from? And it's crazy how people have no idea. I'm probably calling a lot of people out right now. And this is fine. Like, I think we all start here. But so many people I talk to are like, oh, I don't know. That feels like a good number. Like, I just don't want to spend more or spend less than that. Another thing too, I'll say is like, a lot of people are like, oh, my budget is how much money I have. No. Your budget should be based on what the property can bring in. Your budget is not just how much money you have. Your budget needs to actually be a really intentional calculation. If you've got 30 grand lying around, but the property can only bring in an additional 15,000 and you're already at the top, you don't have a $30,000 budget. You have closer to a $5,000 or $10,000 budget to make these improvements. So there's so much confusion, I think, on what people what numbers they have. I've talked to a lot of people who say, oh, you know, we have 100,000 cash, so we probably can only purchase something around 400 to 500,000 because we can only put, you know, we'll have to account for 10 to 20% down. And it's like, well, have you talked to a lender where maybe you can put 10% down and like stretch that now? Or what you were saying, leave that buffer. Do we need to go even smaller? Because now we need to leave a buffer for renovations. Yeah, this is something people have no idea what their budget is. Like that number, as soon as you ask someone what their budget is, it's like prepared to like have to coach them through the whole thing because people really have no idea. It's all just like, I think I don't want to spend more than this.
Yeah, there's that. And then like, you know, I'm like, okay, well, what kind of returns are you looking for? Like, what are you looking for, you know, as an ROI, return on investment? And people are like, well, what can I get?
And that's why we're here. So I'm not like faulting anyone.
No, I love these conversations.
I mean, I think people are just like, oh, I stayed at an Airbnb. This is literally the calculation. I stayed at an Airbnb and we paid $300 a night. 300 times 365 equals this. That's how profitable it is. So let me buy a place for $250,000 and I'm going to make an extra $250,000 a year. And it's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Like there's so much we need to peel back. And I love it. That's why we do this.
Yeah. That's funny. I've heard that a lot too. I think with what's going on for the future, well, what's going on currently and how that impacts how we invest in the future, I really think it is a mindset of, look, your down payment is a piece of the pie that you're going to have to invest into the property. Just so many people are not used to thinking like that with SDR investments, really a lot. LTR investments too. It's like I bought an apartment complex. You know, maybe we did some updates to it, but it's a commercial asset and we can refinance and get some of that money back. But I didn't have to put in, you know, it's basically the investment amount that goes into it. With short-term rentals, you have to invest in design and decor and these other things, especially if you want to be in a big, popular, competitive market.
Yes. There are certain markets out there. If someone tells me that their budget is like under, let's just say 500,000, immediately I'm like, okay, so we're not going to Scottsdale. Like that now, like, okay, that one's out. Orlando, out. Like there are certain markets that right off the bat, you tell me like your numbers and, you know, we can write off like 50 markets, but there are so many with like those smaller budgets. On the flip side, if you do have $1 million to spend, there's a lot of markets like I wouldn't go to. Like your money will take you so much farther, the multiple of what people are willing to spend in a Scottsdale if you have the $1.2 million budget, I think is going to take you a lot farther than 1.2 mil in the Midwest. There's a lot to think about here with like when you really figure out your budget, it totally changes which market you're going to go to.
Yep. Been preaching that for a while. So I tell people, like, look, understand this first. Yep. So I love that. Well, as we kind of wrap up here, any other future trends or anything else you're seeing in the industry that you want to kind of talk about? Anything else? Maybe things you might think that could happen? I don't know.
Okay. So I think there's a lot of talk about like direct booking. We can touch on that. Direct booking versus the OTAs and stuff. There's definitely a pivot, you know, to wanting to own your own brand. I love it. The thing is, there's a lot of costs you have to invest in something like that. It's not as easy as just like, let me throw up a website and now I save the on the service fees from the OTAs. You have to do a lot of marketing and legwork to get people there. So that's kind of one thing I'll throw out. But to wrap up, because I worry maybe this was a little bit of a pessimistic conversation where like a lot of numbers are down. The competition is fierce. Let me add this. And I say this a lot. I've said this a ton. People have probably heard this before. And I say it partially as a joke, but ultimately it's true. When people ask me, are STRs down? Like, is it too late to get in? My response is STRs have, there's been a need for short-term rentals as long as Mary was looking for an inn to give birth to Jesus. And again, it's like partially a joke, but truly 2000 years ago, long before Airbnb ever existed, before the internet existed, before anything, people did need homes to stay in. That's not going to go away. So I think that if you have that foresight and you're like, this isn't, I know we're talking about trends of the industry, but almost remove yourself from like, this isn't a trend. Like this is here to stay. And if you want to play the long game, you know, you do have to do some refreshes and stuff, but at the bare minimum, like just provide good hospitality, be easy to find, have clear communication, good management skills, care about your guests. And I think everything else will fall into place. A lot of hosts are going to come and go and dip their toe in and realize they weren't cut out for this. And if you can like have that foresight and just know you're in this for a long time, make those improvements that improve the equity of the home, not necessarily the cash flow every time, but play the long game. you're going to be okay.
I love that a lot. So Natalie, I like to ask every guest that comes on the show, because the show is called Cashflow Positive. It doesn't have to be about what we talked about. It could be anything you want. What's one tip you give? Can you give hosts or people to cash flow positive with short-term rentals?
One tip for cash flow positive: don't ever let the threat of a bad review hold you hostage. I see way too many hosts are so scared of any sort of ding to their rating that they immediately throw refunds at it. Absolutely not. You are building a business. You have to have your own two legs to stand on. You have to have a bit of a backbone here. Most of the time, I've seen the guests that threaten that stuff, often they don't follow through. It's kind of a game of chicken, like who's gonna bow down first? But don't ever let that hold you over. There are ways to get reviews removed. And Kenny, you're the perfect person to ask on this anyway. I have seen that the data shows that actually listings with perfect 5-star reviews don't book as well with ones that maybe have like a 4.87. A lot of people think that listings with perfect 5-star reviews, they're deleting bad reviews, they're bought and paid for, they don't trust it. But if you've got multiple reviews, a ton of them, and you're sitting at like a 4.87, that to me builds so much more trust as a potential guest than something with 13 5-star reviews. So don't ever let that hold you hostage and like be willing to give away refunds for that if you know you're in the right. If you screw up, of course, please like generously give back and rectify the situation. But that petty guest, don't let them, don't negotiate with terrorists.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, I love that. Don't negotiate with terrorists. That's the Natalie Palmer positive review. Don't negotiate with terrorists. No. So I mean, when you actually look at the data says that it's more important to actually get the review than to get a 5-star review. So, okay. So the number of reviews is more important than the rating. All right. Now, does that say, like you mentioned, does that mean go out and get a bunch of 4-stars and 3-stars? No, that's not what we're talking about. What it means is that when we looked at the data and we basically ran some modeling on it, it said that getting a review has a bigger impact on your revenue and the ranking of the listing than getting a 5-star. A good example of this is if you go to Amazon and you type in like these or any product, and you look at the rankings of the products, it's like the top, they do it by featured. They don't do it by, you can do reviews. But even if you do it by reviews, the top rated ones aren't actually the top rated. They actually have just more reviews. And typically the products that they show at the top have more reviews, whether they're higher or lower than what you see below. Wow. So that 4.87 with 113 reviews is going to be up higher because it's more established and people are, quote unquote, talking about it, and the algorithm bumps it up in the rankings.
Okay.
Which is, this is normal
yes.
in all products in our on online shopping. And it's the same thing with what Airbnb tries to do as well. They want people to book, and they're going to show the properties that people are talking about, whether it is a 4, they are getting 4 or 5 stars, but they want to show those properties because people are talking about them. They're talking about that experience. And, so that's something to think about. And it's like, yeah, don't go out. And like I said, I'm not saying it, you go get a bunch of 4 stars and you're good with that, but it's okay if you don't get a 5-star every single time.
Totally.
It really is. It really is okay. And I didn't even think about what you have thought about that. Honestly, of people seeing that and going 5 stars, that seems fake.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's very true. I've thought that before about certain things. I'm like, is this like perfect? Like,
it can't,
Be that good.
Yeah.
So that's really, really interesting. Well, Natalie, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you, Kenny.
And just as we wrap up here, if someone wants to get in contact, you learn more about your coaching, learn more about the event, what's the best way for them to do that?
Best way is through my Instagram. Everything I'm doing, I always link and announce through there. So you can just find me at Natalie Palmer.
Natalie Palmer. All right. Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Natalie, for being on the show. And I hope everyone has enjoyed this episode. And if you have, it would mean the world to me if you could go in and leave us a 5-star review.
Yeah, after that, it's like, hey, I'll take a 1-star review.
Yeah, I'll leave me a 1-star just because I said that I was okay. Like a 5-star. So anyway, thank you so much. And I'll see you guys on the next episode of Cashflow Positive.
Thanks.